Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us for tonight's Comic Book Club! And now, here are your hosts, Pete LePage and Alex Salber!
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club! I'm Alex.
I am Pete.
And that's our Band of the Booth, Booth Band! Oh my god, you guys. Justin's still dead. That's
yes,
the first order of business.
Dead.
Justin is still not here. What did he die of again?
I think it's L.A.-itis.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Too much sun?
Yeah, yeah.
Happiness.
Yeah, happiness. That's what it is. He
What's
died
that,
of happiness.
Guys?
For 5 years, we've been doing the show. He's been unhappy, and then he went to L.A., and suddenly he was happy and died.
Yeah, and now he doesn't
That's too bad.
Come
back. What exactly is happiness?
You live in a booth. You'll find out when you're older.
Yeah.
What? There was a second order of business. What was the second order of business?
You got a haircut.
I did get a haircut.
Yeah, it looks like
this
you're...
is good comic book audio podcast stuff to talk about at the top of the show.
It looks like you're growing out your forehead, which is nice.
All right.
Oh.
Do you know what I had actually? Well, I got this haircut. I won't talk about this too long, and I don't know how funny this is or anything. But when I got the haircut, it was from a guy who. I'd never gotten a haircut from before, and he was like, hey, you know what, actually, I can cut your hair really well because I have hair just like yours. We're both a little curly. It poofs out when it's whatever, and he seemed kind of really nicely groomed, and his hair was very well done. What I realized as soon as he started cutting my hair is it was like that logic problem where you go into a town, and on one side of the street there's a guy, a really nice, do you know what I'm talking
what
about?
What are you saying?
Okay. All right, there's this logic problem where you go into a town, and on one side of the street, there's a guy with really well-groomed hair and a nice shop, and on the other side of the street, there's a guy totally unkempt with a dirty shop, and the question is, who do you go to get
dirty shop every time.
Why?
Because they cut the best hair.
Right, they cut the other guy's hair, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
And I realized I was in the same information here. Situation. I was in the same situation. Yeah. That's what I realized. That was my whole story.
Yeah.
Are you glad I told that?
Yeah, that was a great
story. It was really
story.
Good. Also, just a little side note. This has also been my thing with that logic problem. Why would you walk into a dirty shop? Why can't he clean up his shop?
Because he's too busy focusing on the other customers to worry about
still
himself.
Still a dirty shop. If he's so good, he can hire somebody to clean his shop. That's
maybe.
All I'm saying.
It seems a little... nitpicky at this point.
Cool. This is good. We're starting off our comic book show really well.
Yeah, yeah. Let's talk about haircuts and sports.
Yeah, what was the third thing we wanted to talk about?
Oh, you went and saw Amazing Movie and then didn't take me with you, which was cool.
That's right. You're welcome.
Yeah.
Before the show, I went to see The Secret World of Arete.
What's
the
that?
The new Miyazaki movie. I'm making up a bunch of words, you guys. I can't tell you anything about it until February 13th because there's a review embargo.
You could at least say it's awesome.
It was animated.
No way!
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What's that mean?
Well, actually, I will say Amy Poehler and Will Arnett was in it, and that was a little distracting.
Yeah. Oh, that's
it was
weird.
A little distracting. Otherwise, movie great. I will say the movie was great. I really enjoyed it a lot.
All right, there you go.
Great.
That's
was that
review.
Good? Is that
now
good?
Now you're never be
Are
allowed
we slowly to... transitioning into things that actually maybe a little bit have to do with comic books?
Yeah, nope. And being a nerd.
Cool.
All right.
Great. Here's two other things that have to do with comic books and being a nerd, you guys. They are our amazing guests for this show. One of them is the director of movie Joan Svar. I'm going to pronounce it correctly. Joan Svar draws from memory. The other one is the author of The Stan Lee Universe. Ladies and gentlemen, Danny Figueroff and Sam Ball!
Yeah!
Yes! Here they come. All right. Welcome. Yes, take a microphone.
Grab a mic, grab a seat.
Yeah, just have a good time, you guys. Guys, right. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I'm very excited to have you here. Sam, let's chat with you first. Sure. Did I get it right? Joan Svar?
That was beautiful, beautiful.
Thank
you. You speak a melodic French. I like that.
Really?
Yeah.
Dillian.
That's good. That's
show off.
You. And Stan Lee. You just take the name Stan Lee and break it into two. And it's
Stan Stan Lee. Stan Lee. Right. Yes,
accent,
in the French.
Accent aigu over the A.
Exactly. Let's talk about Joan Svar draws from memory first. So tell people who know absolutely nothing about the film, what's the film about?
Okay. Well, the film is about Joan Svar, which was so beautifully said by Alex a moment ago.
And that's all the movie's about.
And it's a portrait film. How many people, show of hands out there in the live audience, know Joan, his work? Okay,
yeah.
Great, great.
Cool.
Yeah, very good, very good.
Two?
Two? three.
So for the other 10,000 of you out there in that endless sea, I can't quite.
It's around 10,000.
Managed to do this at Wembley Stadium.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I'm really excited.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to the match afterwards.
Pete versus Alex.
So. So anyway, Joanne is an extremely prolific cartoonist who does everything from a multi-part series about a rabbi in Algiers to he just did an exhibition on sort of the French Bob Dylan, Georges Brassens, where he did all these paintings and these musical murally things, to stuff that I really love, these day-to-day notebooks of his own life. He draws, and when the executive producer for the film, Valerie Joseph, came to me with this idea, I fell in love with it, first because of his diaries, where he has these gorgeous, minute observations of his everyday life, and that's what he does. If you'll be sitting next to him, he draws everything he does and everything he sees.
So he would be drawing his diaries. Was that with his permission?
Yes, with his permission. Well, not without his permission. But I figured since they were published, I gave myself license to purchase a copy of each one.
Oh, okay.
But there's over 5,000 pages of diaries that are probably the least best selling things he does. But in many ways, a really good entry into his world. And I had a lot of fun because he has two small children who are exactly the age of my kids. And, you know, kids are great for, they say things and you can't believe that somebody said that. There's just always this wonder and this poetry to what these kids will say. Like, there was a moment I was walking with my three-year-old daughter and she said, Dad, look at that flower. It's dancing and the wind is the music.
Whoa.
And you know, there's this beautiful line in one of Joanne's early diaries about his kids where, you know, he's talking to somebody who says, God, your kids say the most amazing poetic things. You have amazing kids. And he says, no, you know, all kids say shit like that. Can I say that over the air?
I have a two-year-old, and the other day I was in my room. Yeah. I was working, and she ran in and said, poopy doopy!
It's an extremely poetic thing. My point is that adults stop saying these things after a certain point. And that's the beauty of kids. Like, they say things that we feel that we stop saying and that we take so much for granted that we stop saying. And that's what these diaries are about. So I fell in love with the diaries, and from there I started reading. The guy's published 150 graphic novels.
What?
And, you know, even in the course of a few years of making this film, I think I've read maybe a third of his output, which is just prodigious. I encourage you all to see the movie. It's Joanne's Far Draws from Memory. Woo! For the lot. Yeah, thank you. Thank you back there. That was way back in the bleachers at Wembley, but you know, I appreciate the shout out. For those of you live here in New York, the show is tomorrow at Walter Reed Theater, Lincoln Center, at 3 p.m. There's a matinee, and at 8:30 p.m. There is planned a PBS release for May of this year, right after, what is it, Colton Abbey or Dalton? Dalton Abbey.
Yeah.
And I don't know actually if it's going to be right after the show, but it sounded like a good thing to say.
Yeah, no. That's good plug.
That's
good plug.
It's a good plug.
It's going to be right after Downtown Abbey.
Downtown Alley. Right after Downtown Alley.
Yeah, that's a relative of Sesame Street, so you're in good hands.
Okay, yes, good.
So it's a 45-minute documentary. It's all in French.
Well, okay, so it's a 45-minute documentary. It's all in French.
If I see it, I'll feel smart.
So if you see it, you'll definitely feel smarter than... You don't look as smart as you are, Alex.
Thank you.
I've been saying that for years.
Cool. But yeah, you'll definitely look...
I'm going to be diagramming that sentence for a while.
Will look smart. I don't know what it is. But, the thing that might be of interest to your audience here is that the film was originally made for a 45-minute French public television slot, but to have a version that would work on PBS, we had to do something extremely creative, which was give them 56 minutes and 46 seconds of programming, which is the only way to get something on PBS. If anybody wants anything on PBS, just make a film that's exactly 56 minutes and 46 seconds
Or you could buy two tote bags.
Or buy two tote bags and pledge $7 to WNET and you're in. So we had to get creative, and we are telling a history, a very slanted, factually incorrect history of the graphic novel in 11 minutes and 46 seconds. Wow. So, and we'll be streaming that as well. So I encourage you to go to Alex's website, which is...
The show's website is comicbookclublive.com.
Comicbookclublive.com, because we'll do some kind of streaming something or other. And you can also go to citizenfilm.org, which is our website, and click through. And actually right now, for those of you in New York who are trying to decide how to spend your Wednesday evening, you can click on citizenfilm.org on the Joanne Sfar Draws from Memory icon and preview a clip from the film, which will then inspire you, we hope, to either skip it entirely if you didn't like it. That would be helpful. Or if you enjoyed the clip, to come to the show.
Awesome. Cool.
Very quickly, before we move on to Danny, because I think this is actually a nice segue, but any interesting or surprising things you found out while putting together the graphic novel history for you, Sam?
Oh, you're asking me?
Yes.
About...
No. When you were putting together the graphic novel history,
things?
Yeah.
What was interesting, you know, and I should say we're still in the works, so I'm very curious to read Danny's book about Clark Kent, which he'll talk about later, disguised as Clark Kent. But yeah, that is one of the interesting things, is that so many Jews were involved in the formation. There it is, disguised as Clark Kent for
hold up to the microphone for the podcast.
I'll do the play by play.
To the microphone. Yeah. Here you can see.
He's literally holding a microphone up to a book.
Yeah, it's coming through great.
Okay. Yeah.
That was good. This is great. Actually, we have a companion podcast, which is just us holding microphones up to books for a solid hour.
Yeah, because a lot of people say, "Oh, how is the new Batman?" And we'll hold the microphone up to the comic.
You'll be the judge.
Just hear the entire sound for an entire hour. It's just. That's the sound of flipping pages, I think, maybe.
Wow, really amazing sound effects there.
Thank you.
Are you a Foley artist?
I'm actually up for the new Police Academy, you guys. I'm up for the new Police Academy.
Don't know.
For Steve Guttenberg's role? Or
he's
what?
A genius.
As Hightower. I think we're... So, actually, let's move on to Jenny. Let's talk about Stanley
Universe. That's a little Blue Oyster.
I'll hold the Stanley book up to the microphone.
Yeah, so tell us about the Stanley Universe. This is a book about essentially Stanley creating everything.
It's a book about Stanley and his universe. It's a lot of, much of it is taken from the Stanley archives at the University of Wyoming in Laramie. There's the PowerPoint, which I had prepared, would show you the...
Let's put it up.
Ooh. Great. Yeah.
That's the next slide.
Don't kill me!
I
don't know why it said that.
Homage to Jackie Vernon, if anybody remembers. There you go. We have one person who remembers Jackie Vernon. There is an American Heritage Archives Center in Laramie, Wyoming. It's a building shaped like a mountain or a teepee, or it's this huge thing you see across the prairie, and it's got archives of show business and entertainment and Dick Cheney, and it just goes on and on, and one of the things they have is close to 100 boxes of Stan Lee archives from, and the reason I went out there and didn't just order stuff online for the book was because there are boxes labeled radio and television interviews, 1947 to 1972. Oh, well, that's clear, you know. And there are indeed radio and television interviews from 1947 to 1972. And some of the best of them are transcribed in the book. There's letters to and from celebrities like Oliver Stone and James Cameron. And again, reaching back in time for you... For you pop culture fans, Sammy Kahn, who was Frank Sinatra's lyricist for so many of his songs. There is a graphic, a screenplay that Stan wrote with Alain René, the French filmmaker, that I have pages of. There's an interview with Lee and Kirby from the 60s. So there's lots of interviews and illustrations and photographs and neat, cool stuff, letters from and to Al Jaffe of Mad Magazine. The coolest thing I found, and the thing that is, I think, the most unexpected, is if you remember the name Frederick Wortham. Wortham was the guy who wrote Seduction of the Innocent. That was that book that in the 50s that started or was kind of the peak of the comic book hating frenzy. He had a research partner named Hilda Mossey, who ended up in a debate on the Barry Farber show in 1968 with Stan. And so she's got this thick Germanic accent, even though she's, you know, a Jewish refugee from the Nazis. It sounds like kind of a cliched German accent. With this woman, very impassioned, very progressive, very loving and caring, but very angry and very excited. And then you have kind of mellow, laid-back Stan. And every time she talks about violence and the children and the research and it's terrible. And Stan goes, "Now listen, Doc." So the book is filled with material like that from Stan's. You know, he just turned 89, so from his,
yeah.
And he's been working in comics and media since he's 18. So from his. Somebody do the math, 70-year career, just things from all up and down the career.
That's ridiculous.
Thank you very much.
I like that.
Now, I'm actually curious, since you have studied him so much, what is there something in your mind that makes Stan Lee different, you know, beyond him being bombastic and obviously a great marketer and everything? He's endured, not just in pop culture, but working for so many years. Why is that, do you think?
People love him. People who... He has the ability to bring out the best in people, and that's what I found. I also interviewed a lot of people who'd worked with him for the book and kept coming across stuff. So, you know, no one is universally loved, but...
Oh, I am. I'm sorry.
Okay,
I am.
With that and me too, and Jim Salicrup who's here in the front row.
Yeah. So, but the only three universally loved people are...
Right,
here.
And Stan Lee. Stan... apparently, from the way everybody who's worked with him describes it, just had a way of when if he would criticize you, it was to make the work better. If he delegated something to you, it was to bring out the best in you. Everybody who worked with him that I spoke to, or that whose correspondence I saw, I hear that over and over. Whereas other editors of his generation that I won't name, there were some that were not so nice, and they may have created the mythology that we know, but they left a real trail of bodies. And Stan seems to have left a trail of mostly friends, admirers, and people who felt he brought out the best in them. So I think that's why he's lasted. I think what you see on TV is a little higher volume of what you see in regular life. What you see is what you get with the guy.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, when me and Justin, who's dead now,
R.I.P.
Me and Justin interviewed him at the Comic-Con, we didn't know what to expect. Obviously, he's a little bit older, but when he enters the room, it's magical. And there's just something about an energy and a glow and just a genuine niceness of like, hey, how are you? What's going on? Yeah, let's do this. And it was, I really felt like a giddy schoolgirl. I was like, oh, my God. And he just kind of brings that out, and it was really something.
When he took off his glasses and shook down his hair, was he beautiful?
Oh, he was so beautiful. Because first he had a library book, and he felt a little awkward, but then when he took off his glasses in slow motion and shook his hair out, oh, it was unbelievable.
Yeah. For the podcast audience, not so much, but for the people here, just one of the things I found in the archives, a book that Mario Puzo, who did lots and lots of writing for Magazine Management, which is the company that owned Marvel Comics, before he wrote The Godfather, wrote a children's book called The Runaway Summer of Davy Shaw. It's a little known work in the Puzo. And there's an autograph that Stan had kept in his files, the inscription for Stan Lee, whose imagination I cannot hope to equal.
Wow.
So I have that.
That's awesome.
That inscription reproduced and a copy of this Puzo book, who otherwise was writing The Godfather.
Yeah,
and
I just want to mention, actually, for people who are listening at home, the cover of the book has a horse, which is kind of interesting.
It has a horse in a rowboat.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true. It has a horse. Yeah. The horse has it. Horse
that's
does
the
have
horse's
its head,
head
on, though.
If yeah, you're wondering what the horse's head was.
Well, where the horse came from. Yep. This is a prequel to The Godfather.
Yeah.
That's
that's crazy.
That's my mind is blown.
Yeah.
So, yes, I will be signing and selling these. Can I plug a couple of upcoming things, or do you have more questions?
No,
I don't think so.
Yeah, get out of here.
Okay, I know. How dare I sully the comic book club with crass commercialism?
This is about art.
Yeah.
Art
integrity.
Who?
That's it, and all that.
Yeah. And comic books.
Yeah. Coming up this Saturday at the Society of Illustrators here in New York City, I will be curating an event called Comics Out Loud, which will feature Louise Simonson, Walt Simonson, Bob Wyachek, Chris Sotomayor, and John Workman making comic books in front of your eyes.
Wow. Mm.
So that's Society of Illustrators. Then on the 2nd of February, I will have another event celebrating the Stan Lee universe at that annual panel at the Museum of Comic and Cartoon Art. The panel will be me.
Mocha
will be me, Al Jaffe, Denny O'Neill, Peter Sanderson, David Bennett Cohen of Country Joe and the Fish, who visited the Marvel bullpen and who I interview in the book about his visit to the Marvel bullpen in 1969.
Wow.
I just heard that Flo Steinberg will be there, although she told me not to plug her, so don't anybody tell her that you heard me say that. Flo will be in the audience. Maybe a couple more surprise guests. Unfortunately, not Stan. So if you were coming there thinking Stan would be there, all these, you'll have to make do with Al Jaffe, Denny O'Neill, and people like that.
I refuse.
Okay, you will have to not make do with them. And then in March here in New York City, just to keep your ears and iPads open for a two-day symposium called Comic New York at Columbia University that I'm running with Karen Green, who is the Columbia Comics Librarian, Jeremy Dauber, a Columbia professor. And it'll be 2 days of comics panels with everybody from Arsa Koryak to both Romitas and everybody in between, you can imagine. So it's called Comic New York. In April?
Yeah, if you could actually
in
go
April,
through the rest
nothing.
Of the
months. I'm out of tricks. Well, April will be April will be many classes at MoCA where I run the education department.
Now, before we move on to the next section, I was curious. You guys, I don't want to slag off our other guests or anything, but you guys seem like two of the more erudite, scholarly guests that we've had here on the show recently.
You're in big
I hate
trouble.
To see your other guests.
My question is, between Joan's Farr
and
good looking
too, you people in podcast land.
Yeah. Between Joan Farr and Stan Lee, who would win in a fight?
Yeah, intellectualism.
A physical fist fight.
Like now or
knocked
like
out
years ago?
I think it's Stan Lee. In the mud.
Whoa, Alex.
They're in bikinis, I think.
Calm your fantasies down.
Well, I think Stan has experience on his side. Yeah. So I think despite the obvious inequity in the age and in the age department, I think Stan would probably be able to triumph. What do you think?
I'll go with Stan. Am I allowed to take the same side?
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'll go with Stan.
All right, there you go.
He's pretty ripped.
Excelsior, bitch!
All right, it's time for our next section.
Say that in French.
Which we like to call the stack.
Woo!
All right. For those of you who are new to the show, we made a couple of picks, comic books we particularly like this week, and we're going to go to bat for them. Funnily enough, the first one we're going to go bat for is Batman.
No, don't pause.
Number bat.
Oh, boy.
It's not true. It's Batman number 5. Pete, this is one of your picks.
You're right, it is. This is an amazing comic. Scott Snyder is writing it. I can't say enough about Scott Snyder and what he's doing in the Batman world. When he was on Detective Comics before this, it was twisting and turning. You didn't know what was going to happen, how it was going to unfold. And I was nervous about him coming over to the Batman title, but it's the same thing again. It's really amazing. This is just fantastic Batman stories.
For those of you who haven't been reading it, mind if I fill in a little bit of the plot?
Sure.
So Batman's been going up against this new group called the Court of Owls that has existed as long as Gotham City. And Batman basically feels like, well, I know Gotham City. I know it inside and out. There's no secrets from me. Nobody has any secrets whatsoever. But this is one actual secret, something
Huge.
He doesn't know about. He is trapped in a labyrinth, and the entire issue, he's going steadily insane. And the cool thing that they do with the page structure is it rotates as you're going on, as Batman's world literally gets turned upside down.
And then it's,
the comic book gets turned upside down.
Right,
as well.
And then it's backwards, and you have to go backwards to go forwards.
Are they selling a turntable you can buy with it?
I'll tell you what, you don't have to turn it upside down yourself? A couple of weeks ago, I started buying most of my comics digitally, and I got this for iPad. Trying to read this on an iPad is a fucking nightmare.
Screen locked.
Yeah, so, yeah, I figured that out eventually. But this is a comic you got to read as print. I was wrong about that. You should not buy it digitally.
Yeah, don't buy digital, man.
Yeah, another
No.
In general, you can buy digitally. This is one you should pick up in print. They did an amazing job with it. It's a gorgeous-looking issue. Great writing. One other thing that I was thinking about while I was reading this issue, Scott Snyder, he tweets about this sometimes. He has a couple of little boys, sons, who are in school. How cool would it be to be like, yeah, my dad writes Batman?
Yeah, I know. Can you imagine that?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Do you think there's a way we could get Scott Snyder to be our dad?
It would be creepy, but I would do it. I got to say that, like, seeing Batman, like, tripped out, lost in a maze, was so powerful and so, like, I don't know how he's going to get out of this one. I really don't. I don't see it happening.
I don't think he will. I think this is the last
issue of Batman.
I think he's done for.
Yeah, that's it.
I really think this is it. This has got to be the second last issue of Batman.
Is Johann Svarr doing any Batman?
Not yet.
Okay.
But although there is sort of a Jesus thing going on the cover here.
Yep.
Like, Jesus, what's going to happen to Batman?
Yeah, like, well,
great issue. Definitely pick it up. Let's move on with one of my picks, which was Memorial number 2 from IDW Comics, written by Chris Roberson. I really like this book a lot, and I think Pete's going to agree from the grin on his face. This is a new book. The miniseries is... Chris Roberson wrote a couple of the spin-off things from Fables. So this is almost like a riff on Fables. It's basically dealing with these three mystical kingdoms, one where every idea that could ever exist exists. Then when those ideas come about...
In Maybe Land. Right.
When somebody invents one of those ideas, it moves to a different land. And when people forget about it, it moves to another land. And there's somebody that's basically wrecking all this thing. So there's a bunch of fictional characters like Oberon and Titania that show up. And Puck shows up a little bit. Other characters show up. But there's one girl with no memory who's caught in the middle and trying to find out exactly what's going on. I think it's really cool... very creative, very exciting new work. And thank you, Pete, for agreeing.
Oh, my God. First, I got to say, I had no idea she had no memory. I started reading this comic, and I was like, this is the dumbest woman in the world. And I didn't realize she didn't have any memory because she was literally, like, walking around the island. And she walks by this door, and she was like, how do I get off this island? And I feel like the guy in the movie, like, yelling at the screen. I was like, there's a door right there. And then she was like, oh, the door's locked. And then the talking cat was like, you have a key. I was like, this woman is so stupid. Now I am the stupid one. But once I got past that, the world and everything was so imaginative and so cool that, like, I was like, oh, man, this is really an amazing story and an elaborate, very creative idea. And I also love the idea of, like, if you're going after somebody, instead of having, like, dogs or whatever, it had two of those, like, dragons, chained up like dogs.
Yeah, one of the things, because they have access to anything, anywhere, they use living shadows, they use statues. It really is kind of like a mix between Fables and Lock and Key in a certain way. It's a really creative, fun book.
Yeah, it really won me over. Yes.
I'm very surprised. I thought you were going to rip into me about that.
Nope, I was. That was the plan. But then I was like, this is good. Damn it, Zelbin, this is good.
All right, let's move on with Pete's next pick, which was Avenging Spider-Man,
yeah.
number 3 by Zeb Wells and
One
a bunch of other
agrees.
People drawing it, right? Yeah. Pete, you really like this book. What did you like about this book?
Well, first of all, this is also available digitally, free, which is cool. You don't have to pay an extra dollar.
If you buy the comic book.
Right. If yeah. you buy it, you
I'm not saying like
digital
you can go
copy
to...
for free.
Yeah.
Some of them will charge extra bucks, so
right.
it's a yeah. nice little bonus.
Yeah, what's your problems, Albert?
Yeah,
I'm
get
sorry.
Off my back.
Yeah!
Just...
All
right.
Anyways, this is just a real cool kind of, I think this is, for me, this is a classic Spider-Man story of like, you know, sometimes Spider-Man is the perfect superhero for problems. And it's like, this was a great, thank you for laughing at that. And I feel like it was cool because Red Hulk got in there and he just wanted to smash and kill things, which I'm a big fan of. But like sometimes a little humor and talking things out in a quippy kind of way, you can really solve some problems. And it was actually a really cool idea, and I was very happy to read it.
Wow, you sound a little bit like an after school special.
What is the what is Avenging in the title referred to? Is he teamed up with a different Avenger in every issue?
Nailed it!
What?
Oh my God!
Wow,
you are brilliant.
At least they're not resorting to something corny like a Marvel team up. That would be ridiculous. So, okay.
It is a fun book, though, I will say. Zeb Wells is a really good, really fun writer. He's also writing a Carnage series right now. I could care less about Carnage because Carnage is, I'm Venom, but I'm really Venom. Like, super Venom, more
yeah.
than Venom is Venom.
And I have a different color.
Yeah, and I kill people. But he manages to find good, fun stuff about all these characters. He writes really creative set pieces as well. Yeah. The same thing with this. I'm curious for both of you guys... if you have any opinions on this whatsoever, in terms of, we've been talking about digital versus print a little bit with these comics. Any thought on that? Do you read just print, just digital, don't care whatsoever? Cool.
Nice dramatic pause.
I read both. I make use of the amazing deal that is the $5 a month for Marvel's basically entire library to read digitally at marvel.com.
Nice.
And I'm not even working for them anymore, so I get nothing out of that plug, but it's kind of wild that you could even read Irwin Hazen's The Ferret digitally, were you so inclined, from Marvel Mystery Comics number 4, or everything up. I think they kind of embargo stuff up to like 6 months or a year ago, but you know, $5 a month to read all that stuff. You can't download it, but so I will just sort of pick and choose and go in and read stuff. But I am basically a print kind of guy. I mean, I like the look and feel and smell and the fact that I can no longer walk around my apartment because there are stacks of books and comics.
Oh, I hear you. Amen. I'm about to get my wife's about to divorce me because of that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
But she's gonna keep the comics, right?
Yeah. She gets half. She gets half the comics. Yeah.
Oh, geez. Yeah. You got to hold on to her.
Sorry, Pete.
Well, I would divorce her, but I can't find her. I think she's somewhere between the Avengers and Venom, but I can't. That's a big gap.
Well, you probably bagged and boarded her.
Oh, right.
To preserve her,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, because yeah. I'm going to sell
you make
her
that, you make that sound
later.
Dirty somehow, you know?
Yeah. Now, I can't decide, Pete, is your wife fine or is she very fine?
She's very fine.
Nice.
She's a 10.0, not a 9.8.
Awesome. I don't. You went beyond me. Sam, do you have any?
Yeah. I mean, I love to read print. For me, it's an escape because I look at screens of various kinds all day. Plus, I've been resisting. I don't want to buy an iPad because I know as soon as I buy one, they're going to come out with the next one. So I'm an
well.
Eternally,
eventually, it's going to happen.
I know. So that's why I don't. You know, I never. I just don't. You know, I don't even go there. But I guess what I'm sort of waiting for is a digital comic that will do things with the medium that we haven't seen yet, that'll take full advantage of the online form. And I'm kind of waiting. So any tips you have on stuff that, you know, uses video, and it just seems like there's so much potential that maybe it's not even a comic anymore, but... I feel like I'm waiting for this great illustrator to come along to really do something.
A lot of people have been talking about, they just released iBook Author through Apple that is supposed to be for textbooks, and it allows you to do things like put video in there, put transitions, kind of make it like a PowerPoint presentation, but a textbook. And a lot of people are saying, well, you could do that for comics. You could do the same
thing. I think somebody will come along and do that.
Yeah.
We'll just have to wait and see.
It would be awesome to be able to, you know, digitally read a comic and then hit play on something and watch.
Yeah.
You know, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
It would be awesome to never have to look up for my screen. Ever. Just eventually drool myself.
I can't wait
to
get a chip in my head that's just going to play stuff all the time.
Yeah. Internet.
I have that chip, and it's pretty good. It's really...
And very then it's called memory.
You can get an online divorce, too. It's just
whoa.
That's great. This is getting really deep, you guys.
Yeah.
Let's do the last pick real quick. This is one of my picks. I was really surprised about this pick. I think Pete was pretty surprised about this pick, too. This is from IDW Comics. It's Danger Girl Revolver, number one. Now, this is a series that is mostly known as the series where it's three busty girls who are taking the place of James Bond, and that's basically it.
Nobody else.
Yep. So I was not expecting to like it, but it was a ton of fun, I think, from top to bottom. It does play out like a big action movie. There's exciting set pieces in it. Everybody is very well drawn and very different. And there's the busty stuff, but they don't play it up too much.
Are you kidding me? The first page is the guy in a hot tub full of busty ladies.
Busty.
Then there's a girl breaking out of a wedding, and her boobs are bigger than the horse she's riding.
Horse.
Then, there is the...
Do you know what boobs look like?
Boobs.
They don't look like horses.
Wait.
Okay.
I got to see The Godfather again. I thought he woke up in the head with a
boob.
Yeah, boob in the bed.
Yeah.
I don't know if that would be scary.
That was the porn parody.
Oh, right.
Yeah, you're thinking of the boob
father. Father boob father. Nice.
That was not good. The cock father? I don't know. What do we want to go with? What's a good Godfather porn parody title?
Let's spend some Godfucker. Time on this.
Godfucker? That's pretty good. Danger Girl Revolver number one, now available from IDW Comics.
You mean every time I think I'm out? Never mind. Okay.
So. Yeah, there we go. Okay. And speaking of out, that's it for the stack. Guys, we are going to move on with our next section, which is my favorite section, because you guys make it up. It's your audience questions. And for that, we're going to bring out Boothman, who, it should be noted, lives in the booth. There you go.
Hey.
Questions, Boothman.
That's not my full name. First question.
Questions, Mick Boothman.
What comic has inspired you to do something good, if any? Because you guys aren't that, nice.
Wow. Have you ever read a comic that inspired you to do some good?
Wow.
It's a tough one.
I'll get by you some time and go.
Okay, buy me some time.
Yeah, yeah. Scarlet, when the first issue of Scarlet by Brian Michael Bendis.
Right.
Which
is about blowing shit up.
Right. I immediately went out and started fighting crime after that because I was inspired by it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
How's that going?
Pretty bad. It's tough. It's a lot harder than you think.
Yeah.
Like, in the comics, the bad guys just fall down when you start hitting them.
I didn't want to mention this, but you're actually bleeding out on stage
right now.
I think you've forgotten that the criminals are a superstitious, cowardly lot, and you must take advantage of that.
Well, yeah, it turns out they're not. If you start punching somebody, they, like,
you should have
hit harder.
You should have watched a little documentary called Kick-Ass, that would have helped you with that a little bit. Yeah. Comics that inspired you to do something good.
Right.
This shouldn't be as hard to think about as it is. I don't know. Yeah, you got one, Boothman?
The comic Blankets by Craig Thompson.
Okay.
Which is about a guy at two stages of his life, one where he's like a kid in a teenager in a Christian summer camp or something like that, winter camp, and one where he's a boy. And at the time, I looked at religion kind of like, ugh, religion. And now, after reading that, I was like, religion's kind of nice sometimes. And that I haven't done anything good, but I've been nicer to people probably. Probably not.
No, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Did you have one in the audience? Somebody said, ah! Oh, there was somebody slowly. It was a ghost.
Yeah. I would have to say that after reading Too Cool to Be Forgotten, I called my dad and told him I loved him.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, that's pretty good. I think Not to be funny, just so you know. So when I'm not funny, you won't be surprised. I think the whole superhero genre is sort of at its best is inspirational to, you know, do good stuff and to do, dare I say, the right thing. Yeah. And we sort of, if you've been reading them from a young enough age, you may not succeed, but even with a little power comes a little responsibility. And could I be any cornier? Is that? but I mean, I think that's the appeal of those comics to people who like them. You know,
I agree.
No, nothing.
All right, nothing.
Sam,
I guess it depends how you define good, but which is, you know, relative. But I was thinking about those diaries, and I think they inspired me to take the Joan Sfar's diaries. Inspired me to take more pictures of my kids. I really wasn't, you know, sort of a busman's holiday. You know, you were a film production company, and it's a lot of pictures, and we're doing more multimedia documentaries too. So there's a lot of photo stills. So you go home, and you don't want to deal with pictures sometimes. But just remembering. It's a comic book where life goes by really fast. So it's a page turner, and something's happening every page, and yet every page is a day in someone's life. So it sort of reminds you how quickly it all goes. And I don't know that it's good that I take pictures of my kids, but it made me take pictures of my kids.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, you're stealing their soul.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it could be bad. They'll be traumatized on the internet. And all.
Pete, you do that too when you crawl on top of my kid at night and suck at her.
Well, right. I'm eating her soul.
That's right. Oh, okay, because you're a cat.
No, I'm an evil person.
Oh, okay, cool. I made that weird. All right, raise your hand if you ask that. You're going to get some free comics. Let's get the next question.
Which series is better, Mario or Legend of Zelda?
Oh, boy.
Wow.
Oh, boy, Legend of Zelda.
What?
Yeah.
No, Mario.
Well, if we're talking... No. Legend of Zelda. Rebuttal.
No. Mario.
No. Legend.
No. Mario.
Legend.
Mario.
Legend. Legend.
Ladies and gentlemen, we bring you the next president of the United States.
Yeah, I mean, if we're talking quality-wise, Legend of Zelda is a better series. If we're talking...
What? What do you mean quality?
If we're talking a better made...
They evolved... You know, Legend of Zelda seemed the same thing. Like, Mario evolved...
How about emotional depth? Emotional depth of Mario series. I mean,
what about the princess being kidnapped? That's emotional.
I remember. There was that time that Mario stepped on that mushroom, and I bawled. But other than that... I know what they're called. I'm trying to... For these people out here who might
not... Yeah, sure.
Do you guys have any opinions whatsoever about this erudite topic? Our most erudite guest?
Utterly clueless about the topic.
Yeah?
Totally clueless.
Oh,
both really good.
Well, the correct answer is Legend of Zelda.
No, it's... clue you in, it's which game is better, Super Mario Brothers or Legend of Zelda?
I understood the question.
Oh, okay.
Cool. Raise your hand if you asked that. The answer is Legend of Zelda, and you're getting some free comics. Let's get the next question.
Let's say your family pet was an evil superhero. What would its name be?
Catzor.
I don't know.
Catzor?
Catzor. That sounds pretty evil. Right?
Mr. Bigglesworth?
Sure. That's an actually evil pet from fiction.
I believe the... pet would be crypto fascist, I believe.
That's pretty good. Wow. Any other evil pets? Pete.
Oh yeah, jeez.
What? I don't know. Cats. We got to think about cats, you guys. Think about cats. Anything about cats? Something about dogs, maybe?
Oh yeah, Azrael.
Azrael. Well, that's an evil cat. Yeah. But would you name it Azrael? I don't know. What?
What's his name? Bubastis? Isn't that how you pronounce it? Do you
not know? Sounds like a. Sounds like a point.
That's what's his name from Watchmen? Ozymandias. Yeah. Weird pet.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't know. I never read Watchmen.
Boo! Give me your nerd card.
All right, I'll give it to you after the show. It's really big. It's like the size of one of those novelty checks.
Okay.
Cool. Another great question. Raise your hand if you ask that. You're going to get some free comics. Let's get the next question.
I really like this question. What is the best superpower that is useless in combat?
The best superpower that is useless in combat? You want me to answer this, Pete, because I can answer Cypher?
Yeah, Cypher.
Yes,
is
okay.
Exactly.
My go-to answer is Cypher, whose his ability is language. Being a dictionary. That is very useful in combat because you always need people who can translate code. So, in fact, in wartime, Cypher would be even more needed than he is now, which is already very needed.
Shut up.
What? Fine, come up with a better answer than Cypher.
What about Daredevil's ability to count the number of grains of salt on a pretzel with his tongue? Which is one of his powers in the origin story.
That was awesome. You did a spit take. That was awesome.
Any other superpowers? Invisibility would be pretty good.
Invisible jet. How are you going to find that thing? I'd be like, stop fighting. I got to go to my invisible jet. And they'd be like, oh, where did I put it?
Sure. I think by the point you get an invisible jet, you've dealt with that problem in some way.
I don't think that's correct.
Right. Like you have some. Wonder Woman has bat powers, right? So she can use sonar. Use echolocution to find out where. No, she doesn't have that?
No.
I don't know. I don't really know much about
If you say stealth, it sounds a lot less silly than invisible, don't you think?
What?
If you say stealth, it sounds a lot
yes, that's true.
Cooler than invisible.
Any other powers useless?
Stilt man?
Yep. Yeah. I can think of another good one. Resurrections man's powers would be pretty good.
Bouncing boy was pretty bad.
Yeah, Matter Eater Lad, that doesn't really come in handy in war. Yeah, you just eat a bunch of matter. I mean, it also doesn't come handy in life. Cool, raise your hand if you ask that. You're going to get some free comics. We're going to do a lightning round for the rest of the questions where the first answer is always correct.
Why is it so difficult to make costumes look good on TV and in movies?
Because comic books are made up. And they don't translate well to real life. I mean, that's kind of an obvious answer, but just the way people look in comic books is not the way most people look in real life. And when they choose actors for something, the people who actually do look like that are not necessarily the best actors. So you got to choose somebody who's the best actor for the part and then make a costume that works for them and not the other way around. I think
isn't lightning round usually a one-word answer?
Yeah.
Yeah. Just checking.
Yep.
Yeah.
I would say tights are weird.
All right, better answer. Let's get the next answer. Question.
Halle Berry is Catwoman. What's up with that?
Exactly.
Okay.
Next question. That was the right answer.
Who edited the single best-selling issue of Spider-Man?
Could that have been Jim Salicrup?
Correct answer.
Correct answer. Correct. There we go.
If you were an evil, mad, both, scientist, what superhero's corpse do you think would be most useful to your hideous experiments?
Giant man?
Yeah, because you get the most out of it.
In your opinion, what is the worst comic book to film adaptation of all time?
Oh, boy. Yeah, Jonah Hex?
That's up there.
That's pretty bad. Do you guys have an opinion? Worst comic book to film adaptation. American Splendor, probably.
American Splendor?
No, I'm kidding. Oh, my God, I'm kidding.
Wow, that was crazy.
Jesus.
Boothman, like, lost control. Howard the Duck?
Howard the Duck.
I don't know.
I have to imagine that's actually kind of fun, right?
Yeah. Oh, man.
Not really. I don't know. I wrote the adaptation, and I still haven't seen the movie.
Really?
Yeah. I wrote the comics adaptation of Howard the Duck without...
How did you work?
Well, nobody ever sees those movies, because how do you think they get the adaptations out on time or ahead of the movie? Because you do it from stills and often a version of the script that has a different ending than the one that you were working from. So that's always fun when something you're adapting has a completely different finale.
Elektra was pretty bad.
Yeah.
That was pretty bad. I think we'll go with that. Let's get the next question. Last question.
This actually isn't a question, but more of a demand.
Uh-oh.
Hey, Pete LePage, do a super dance. So do it.
All right, I'm going to do the pencil sharpener.
All right, there you go. That was a pencil sharpener.
Yeah.
Great. Next week is just going to be a one-hour-long dance party. Thank you, Boothman. That's it for the audience questions.
Thank you, Boothman.
All right, now, Sam, for the past 2 weeks, we've been running a contest on the show where Pete has chosen the best audience question, and the best audience question winner has gotten two passes to go see Joan Sfar Draws from Memory tomorrow at Lakehead Center. We're going to turn it over to you this time. What was your favorite question from the audience questions?
It was the evil pet question.
Yeah!
Evil pet question. All right. So whoever asked the evil pet question, come and see us after the show. We're going to take down your name, and you're going to have two passes to go see Joan Sfar Draws from Memory.
And also a reminder to show up a half an hour early so that you can get there enough time to get in.
Yeah, we could have let them know that in person.
Well, it's fine.
Yeah, okay. But everybody needs to know that.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Guys, when you're seeing a movie, show up early.
You got to get
prepared ahead.
Yeah. You gotta get popcorn, you gotta get some snacks. Yeah. Let's move on with our next section, which we like to call the Week in Geek. All right. We are gonna hit you with a couple of geek and culture topics, news items that happened over the past week, and we're gonna talk about them. That sounds pretty good. First of all, today, this morning, Oscar nominations happened. There was a bunch of them. I don't know if you guys checked any of them out, any opinions on them, things you were excited to hear about, things you were disappointed that it happened. Do you get involved in that at all? Being,
you know, I didn't follow, and I figured if I was nominated, they would call me, and if I wasn't, I don't want to know about it. So I just, I just ignore it unless
you were nominated a couple of times.
I get that. I figured they would have. Somebody would have, you know, Facebooked me or something.
Yeah, best actor, yeah. Actress.
Though, you know, there is an actress named Sam Ball, my homonym.
Really?
Yeah.
Have you ever met her?
It's a he. And I have never met him, though we did correspond. And for a while, he was on these Gap, huge Gap ad billboards. He was kind of, Gap did this whole series on up-and-comers. And he was wearing this green hat from the Gap, which I happened to have as well. And, you
whoa.
Know, and we were, actually, it was when we were shooting this film. And we're shooting in Paris, and, you know, we're booking a sound engineer. And I remember saying, you know, this is a documentary film. It's low budget. And he goes, "What do you mean it's low budget? I saw you on a billboard the other day. Like, what, you know, low budget? What do you mean low budget? I'm thinking my rate is, you know, 1,500 euros an hour." And I said, "Well, no. I'm thinking a billboard on a billboard." And I realized it was the other Sam Ball. And for a while, he had an AOL account that was Samuel L. Ball. I shouldn't. I'm not going to reveal the Samuel L. Ball. Wait a minute, Samuel L. Ball 6329547824
Niner.
It was a 49er. And mine was one digit different. And so I'd get these strange emails. And actually, we had a film at Sundance at the same time, and I got there, and I don't know if this will mean anything to anybody because it didn't mean anything to me, but I checked in with the producer of the film that I directed, and the woman who checked us in said, "Oh, Trudy Styler has a message for you." Does that ring a bell to anybody? It's Sting's wife, Trudy Styler, who's also a film producer. And I said, "Oh, okay, who's Trudy Styler?" And the person behind it sort of laughed like, like, that was not a funny joke. I was like, I don't know who this is. And the producer said, "Don't worry, this is a mistake. She did not leave you a message." And there were several things like that where, you know, celebrities would leave messages. And finally, we figured out what was going on because I was in the hospitality lounge and the other Sam Ball's agent heard me say my name on a phone call and said, "Hey, you know, I'm Sam Ball's agent, the other Sam Ball."
That happens to me with all the other Danny Fingeroths.
It's constant.
Yeah.
And another guy behind me said, "I'm the other Danny Fingeroth."
That was me,
and
too.
And then I was really confused.
I've got a friend of mine you might know, a guy named Alan Berliner.
Made
a movie called The Sweetest Sound, and part which is about people who, it's about hearing your name, that's the sweetest sound, but in one scene he invites everybody in the world he could find named Alan Berliner to dinner at his apartment, including a French filmmaker named Alain Berliner, and they all meet, and it's zany wildness ensues when all the Alan Berliners get together. They cancel each other out, and there's a big atomic explosion. So, not really. No, that's
does somebody run in and say, Alan Berliner, your wife is dead.
Oh. He's like,
okay. All right. Let's move on with the next piece of information for you guys. We were talking about this a little bit before the show. DC Comics and Entertainment unveiled a new logo this week that a lot of people were a little upset about initially because they felt it looked very corporate. Then they felt a little better about it when DC unveiled the fact that they'll change the D to reflect what is going on. So, for example, the DC logo on Batman will look a little more like Gotham City or a bat or something like that. Or on Green Lantern, it'll glow green. Did you guys check out this logo? What do you think about it? Do you think it's an improvement over the old one, or do you think it's a huge step down? Pete?
I'm just so happy that the DC logo will change with every comic. I mean, because it's so annoying having the same logo in every comic, because it's like, oh, we get it, DC. It's a DC comic. Great news. Awesome. We're changing a logo.
Yeah. Danny, I'm curious, since you came from the business side of the business for a while, what goes into creating a new logo? Were you involved in that ever?
Different logos or different trade dress. Somebody somewhere gets an inkling that people... that this will be the thing that'll change the image of the company or the character, and it needs, I have no idea where these things come from, but you know, there's somewhere in corporate land or somewhere somebody says our identity needs juicing, and then it begins. So I mean, it's fun to do. You know, you can look at what's traditional and what's different and what's digital, and it's just one of those things that I think happens for, it's like rain. I don't know why it happens, but it does.
We're actually having a logo contest. If you go to our website, citizenfilm.org, there's a logo contest, and whoever designs the best logo for us wins a trip to Philadelphia.
Ooh, I hear it's nice this time of year.
Yeah, they make good cream cheese.
Yeah, great.
Now, what if that person already lives in Philadelphia?
Then they get a trip to the out of Philadelphia.
Yes. Thank you very much. We work blue with the Late Show, folks.
Another
night at the Improv, folks.
Yeah, you guys are great. You should have a duo. Another little piece of news that came out. This may be a little spoiler, though probably not, or perhaps a major spoiler if in fact it's true, but there was a possible misunderstanding in a magazine interviewing one of the actresses who's going to be in the Avengers, saying that perhaps Spider-Man was going to be in the movie. Now that sounds like that's wrong, right? Because Sony owns the rights to Spider-Man. They're not going to let it out, let Spider-Man be promoted in another movie. But what do you think about that? Would you actually like to see Spider-Man in the Avengers? Do you think that would be good?
Why not throw another one in there?
You know another what I mean? One?
Yeah, another superhero. Why not? It would be crazy.
You're cranky today.
No, I just feel
who's
that like
cranky Pete?
There's a lot of Avengers. Like that's the move that's going to pull people to the theater? Like, all right, the Hulk, Iron Man, not interested. What? Spider-Man 2? I'm going.
Yeah, I think that's actually pretty accurate.
Oh.
Cool. Last little thing to talk about, and this is, again, possibly in spoiler territory, but we're big fans of Shane on The Walking Dead here. I don't know if you guys have watched The Walking Dead at all. Cool. Thanks. Pete, I wanted to talk to you about The Walking Dead.
Sure.
Great. Walking Dead, big fans of Shane. Apparently, Frank Darabont is doing a new series called L.A. Noir, and he's wooing the actor John Bernthal, who plays Shane, to be the lead of the series. Now, if John Bernthal was the lead in that series, might be a little tough for him to be on The Walking Dead.
He can't walk away from The Walking Dead.
He can't. He could walk away dead. What do you think if maybe they killed him, but he remains a zombie, and they get somebody with, like, real thick makeup to play Shane?
This is a horrible conversation. No, you can't do that.
Alex. He's Shane. He's
Shane. Can't have another guy. That's like, you know, Roseanne, when there was another kid, and then they had to have two episodes where they were just making fun. Like, you look different today. You know, like, I don't want to live through that.
And that's it for the Week in Geek. Guys, we're going to move on with our next section, which is trivia. And for that, we're going to turn it over to Peter LePage.
Wait. What was the Week in Geek? That was not the... That didn't fall into trivia?
No.
Okay, sorry.
There's different sections.
Pardon me.
Yeah.
I'll explain the show to you after we're done.
All right, so before we get back to you, the lovely audience, thank you so much for showing up. We really appreciate it. It's an opportunity to win $25 free in the form of a gift card to Midtown Comics. Who would like a chance for $25? Yes! Calmly bearded man, come on up. Come on up. What is your name, sir?
Danny.
Danny? Audience?
It's going to get very confusing.
All right, let's give you a mic, Danny. Okay, this is how this is going to work.
Okay.
All right.
This is a lot of pressure.
Don't worry about it. It's really... I mean, when you think about it, am I going to have you lose and then you're going to have to go sit down and we're going to pick another person? No.
Yeah, there's not enough time.
So you're in.
Okay.
All right, that $25 is yours.
I'm excited.
As long as you get all three questions right.
Okay.
All right. Oh, man. Pulled the wrong cards. Danny.
Okay.
Stall for me. Doop, 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 doop. Yeah. Nope, Danny.
When you say Danny, I'm confused. Do you mean Danny?
Too many
Dannys. That guy or me?
I'd be talking about the guy we pulled from the audience.
Okay.
To get on stage. And yep, I threw the cards.
Did you know
away.
I had a book called The Stanley Universe coming out?
Well, why don't we just give him the gift?
We had
give
the.
It
was all about Stanley and the Stanley Universe.
But right.
Hey, so we're going to do three trivia questions for you guys now, and Pete's going to sit down. Yeah.
All right,
you all right? Okay, so we're going to do three trivia questions. Yeah, first question, who is the Stanley Universe about? Is it about A, can we hear get the music, please?
All right.
A, Stan Lee, A, B, Joan Svar, or C, this is for my friend Pete, Elijah Dushku.
I'm going to go with Stan Lee.
Stan Lee is the correct answer. All right, wait. Don't have to guess. There's two more questions. There's only three questions. Pete, you get to make up the next question. What's the next question to be?
In the Stan Lee's universe, which comic book company did Stan Lee work for? Is it A, which later became Marvel? B, which later became... Hey, this should be named Stan Lee's comic book company, or C, Zalvin's mom.
I'm going to go with Marvel.
Yes!
All right, third question. This is about Stan Lee universe. It takes place in a universe. Is it this universe, another universe, or Eliza Dushku?
This universe?
That's correct! Unbelievable!
Thank you.
Oh my goodness! Pete and
I was sweating
mics
there.
Here. All right, that was great questions, Pete.
Oh, thank you. I worked really hard on that, and then I lost it on the way to this.
That was really good.
Yeah.
No, that's all right. Don't beat yourself up, guys. As we all know, tomorrow is New Comic Book Day. We recommend you go to Midtown Comics because they've been nice enough to sponsor the show. Pete, what are you looking forward to?
Oh man, I am addicted to Aquaman now. I think the relaunch is. I've never liked Aquaman this much in my life.
Really?
And I'm having such a good time. Aquaman.
It's great. It's a really good book. I'm really looking forward to, there's a book coming out called Avatar, The Last Airbender, The Promise, Volume 1 from Dark Horse Comics, which I would never read, but I got an advanced copy to look over. It's art by Guri Hiru, who are awesome. They perfectly channel the TV series. If you're a fan of the TV series, it's actually a bridge series between that and the upcoming Legend of Korra, but even if you weren't a fan, you can pick it right up, get right into it. It's really fun, really all ages appropriate, and it's a full graphic novel that there's going to be a couple of graphic novels in the series.
And this is a true story. Zalvin gets advanced copies of stuff and won't let me and Justin read them.
Yeah. No, it's true. Yep. Yeah. Because, you know.
You're awesome.
No, it's because I don't. Trust you. What are you guys looking forward to? Sam, what are you looking
forward
to?
I'm going to go with Word Girl.
Yeah.
Word Girl.
World Girl's great.
And the new one is called Coalition of Malice.
Ooh.
And I like the
That's a great name.
It's a great name. So I'm going to go with Word Girl, Coalition of Malice.
And Sam, plug your stuff. What should people be checking out?
And people really should be checking out Joansvar Draws from Memory. And I wanted to mention, for those of you in New York, it's at Lincoln Center at the Walter Reed Theater. It's a co-presentation of the Film Society of Lincoln Center and the Jewish Museum. If you go to the Film Link website or citizenfilm.org, better yet, it's the featured film for 24 more hours on citizenfilm.org. Gets top billing on our website, and you can click through, watch a clip, citizenfilm.org. Decide if you're going to go to the movie, and the show times are listed there, and the info on how to get to Lincoln Center easily. Citizenfilm.org and Joansvar Draws from Memory. Check it out on a Google, on the Google.
Google it.
Yeah, where can we find Google?
You can find it on the Google.
Oh, okay. I usually just go to Bing when I want to look.
Ah!
Oh. What?
Fuck you!
All right, Danny, what are you looking forward to?
Well, I think this is already out, but I believe that if an advanced alien race were to come and judge humankind, whether we were worthy of survival, I believe the full-size reprints of Winsor McCay's Little Nemo in Slumberland would be the only thing between humanity and annihilation. So I would that's what I'm saving in my piggy bank for.
That's because it's so large, right? That book is huge.
It is huge, and, yep. And it's wonderful.
And it's also really good.
And yep. It's all that's standing between us and annihilation.
Yeah. And Stanley Universe, where can people pick that up?
You can find it at tomorrows.com. That's tomorrows with a W, tomorrows.com. The Stanley Universe. You can get it digitally, softcover, hardcover, which I recommend. It's a very nifty hardcover item with bonus color pages. In the hardcover, and you can also further your comics related education at the Museum of Comic and Cartoon Art, where I am the Grand High Exalted Mystic Senior Vice President of Education, and also teach a comics writing course, and that's Mocha NY. That's MOCCANY.org.
Yeah, Mocha.
And you're gonna have a couple of copies that people can potentially pick up after the show, right?
I will have those copies, and my signing hand is itchy.
All right, there we go. A couple of things before we go. You can check us out at comicbookclublive.com, where we have podcasts, information about the shows, forums that nobody uses, things like that. Also, you can check us out at nerdist.com, where the podcast is also syndicated now, which is very exciting. We're still very excited about that and won't stop being excited about that. Pete, other things people should check out?
Friend us on Facebook, and you get to hear all about all of our amazing guests. And please come check out our live show every Tuesday here at the Pit.
Yeah. Speaking of which, next Tuesday on the show, we're going to have Alex Segura, who is writing Archie Meets Kiss, running now in the comics, which has been selling gangbusters. And we're also going to have comedian Eric Grundhauser, who's in a show here at the Pit called Dungeon Masters, which is all about something we know nothing about, D&D.
Yeah, we don't get that.
Yeah, a couple of people we want to thank before we go. We want to thank Sam for being on the show.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Danny.
Bootsman!
But most of all, we want to thank you guys. We're here every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. live at the People's Improv Theater in New York City. Please tell your friends. Good night!
Thanks, everybody!
Thank you!
Thank you.